Chapter 2. The Dismissal of Sir Arental.
Begging your pardon, my lord. Minolan? Guess I'd better learn that. Yes, well, 'tis likely Sir Arental is indisposed, he explained, attempting to be tactful.
Drunk or whoring? I asked.
The man shrugged. I don't know. Could be both. I don't keep track. I know he took Lena back to his chamber last night, though she was loath enough to go, and there was a barrel of wine sent from the Riverport last week. If I was a betting man, he decided, I'd say both.
Good to know. Your name, soldier?
Gorka, my lord. Been head guard here since the war. Little war we had a few years back. Me and my boy. That was him as went for Sir Arental. Gurk. Good lad. We tend the gatehouse.
I glanced at the rough stone building and saw laundry hanging from a line, and a discouraged fire smouldering in the middle of the floor, a battered tin kettle hanging over it. Obviously they lived at the gatehouse too.
How has Sir Arental's stewardship been, in your opinion, good man Gorka? Oh, my lord, I couldn't say. Well, he's out at a job now, ain't he? So no reason for me to hold back, is there?
The peasant reasoned. He broke into a crooked smile.
He's right awful, my lord. Sports with the village girls, whether they want to or no, plays dice with all manner of highwaymen, drinks like a leviathan, all the while the whole vale is fallen down round his ears. Disgraceful, my lord, he added, overselling it a bit.
Much as I suspected, I admitted. Who actually runs the place, while the good knight slumbers through his stupors?
Ah, that would be old Peg, matron Peg, if you want to get particular, though she ain't much of a midwife, and she's not better at leechcraft. But she knows the laundry and cooks, and takes the rents. She sees to the running of things.
I'd like to speak with her as well, but first things first. I cannot legally enter until your master appears, and I believe I see him approaching now. It wasn't hard to. He made a lot of noise as he stumbled down the steep slope. A portly, moustached figure, who was visibly different from the peasants around him only by the tattered finery on his back and the battered sword he wore at his side, was stomping across the outer bailey, the younger guard in tow. As he walked, he was uttering an impressive string of invective, invoking gods I'd only read about. He came to the gatehouse, looked at my party, then at Gorka. His face was deciding whether to be afraid or angry. I decided to take the initiative from him and let him be fearful.
Sir Arental of Heen, I pronounced, not even bothering to magnify my voice with magic. You are hereby discharged from the service of the Duke, effective at once, in favour of Sir Minolan the Spellmonger, Mage Lord of Sevendor. That would be me, I added, when his eyes started shifting. By what authority?
He started to say, when Sir Kay waved that blanket-sized scroll in his face.
By the Duke's authority, I am Lord of Sevendor now, as of this moment. You are relieved, sir. Further, you are granted severance, I said, producing a small purse and tossing it at his feet, and I command you to be gone from my lands by sundown, lest you desire a stay in the stocks.
You can't,
he started, and then stopped.
I am... The Duke has given me title of this estate in fief to his grace. Personally, if you have a complaint, you know where he lives. Get your belongings and your horse and whatever treasures you hold dear, and leave. Now, before I have a chance to delve too deeply into your accounts, I added. He went pale at that and put his hand on his sword.
I wouldn't, Sir Arental,
Sir Kay advised him. Sir Kay is a big man with a deep voice. He knows how to be intimidating. My men were already milling around anxiously on their horses, their own hands on their swords, and more than one had a long Al-Shari Wilderland's bow strung. Compared to his guards, or even his noble self, every one of them looked a professional soldier.
Your cushy billet is over, Sir Arental. Time to pursue the romance of the open road and be gone on some errantry. Now move, so that I can start to clean out this sty and make it livable again.
You dare question my stewardship,
he asked indignantly, after struggling a moment. I could tell by how red his eyes were, how hungover he must be. No, I said, shaking my head. There would have to be actual stewardship for me to question, and I can see that you've been more interested in the bottoms of cups and peasant girls than keeping your charge in order. It is disgraceful, sir.
Of all the impudent, just who do you think you are?
He snarled, finally committing himself by drawing his sword. Oh, I was so hoping he would. I had been looking forward to it. I am Sire Minolan the Spellmonger, Mage Lord of Sevendor, I reminded him, altering my title to indicate I was landed nobility for the first time. My fingers twitched, and I accessed power through my sphere, and suddenly his sword flopped from its guard as if it were made of leather. It's a simple spell, once you know it, and have enough magic power to pull it off. And I am the first landed mage lord made in 400 years. So get the fuck off my property, and if you value your skin, your shadow won't darken this land again. The fat old knight looked like his head was going to explode. I fingered the silken bag around my neck, where my oversized witchstone lived. If he didn't watch his tongue, his head just might explode.
But that's against the bairns,
he sputtered.
No mage may take lands in arms. That's the law. Has been for
400 years, I finished. And what law a duke may make, another may break. His grace has seen fit to do so in my case, as a reward for a service I did the duchy. So if you take issue with my appointment, I suggest you direct your complaints to his grace, who is presently encamped in northern Alshar. Now, are you willing to depart gracefully, or shall I have my men tie you to your horse and leave your peasants to speed you on your way? The man looked down at his floppy sword, defeated.
I shall depart. After 9 long years of faithful service.
That's enough of the farewell speech, I interrupted. My men will see that you have anything you need on your way out. But now that I have presented my patent, I now claim this keep and all of its lands as my own by right. I looked up at the carriage, where Alio was watching me, amused. And now I will take my lady and will go inspect what's left of my hall. Sir Erenthal looked like he might do something stupid, but Sagal put 3 attentive Bovali boys on him with instructions to keep him from running away with anything valuable. Not that there was anything of value there. He spent the next 2 hours stomping around and muttering darkly, but before dusk he was on his way down the road on his ancient sway-backed destrier, looking ashamed and defeated. Meanwhile, I led the party through the gate and up the hill and into the inner bailey, which was just as shabby as the rest of the estate. The inner walls had several sheds and workshops built up against them, smithy, tannery, fletcher, storehouses, but none of them looked like they had seen recent use. The odour of privy and stable mixed with wood smoke in the winter air, and I considered conjuring a small breeze to keep our noses safe. Time enough for that sort of thing later. Gawker had gotten the staff quickly assembled in the bailey for my inspection. They looked like they were made for this place. Old Peg was instantly recognisable, a wrinkled old matron in a shabby old dress, her shifty eyes guiltily downcast. Gawker introduced the cook, the stablemaster, the armourer, the kennelmaster, Sir Erenthal was fond of hunting, and a half-dozen guards to whom I wouldn't have entrusted the care of a 5-day-old pie. Thankfully, I wouldn't have to depend on them for security overmuch. I had brought 5 times their number of Bovali men-at-arms with me, and there were many more on the way. But as I inspected them, I assured them that under the new lordship, any who committed loyally to their work would be retained at an increase in pay, and I invited any who would take their leave to do so with a generous bonus. None did. Why would they? Where could they go? This shithole was their home, after all. The increase in wages was welcome, though. I spent the rest of the afternoon touring the castle with Sir Kay and Sagal, while Alio was inspecting the kitchens. I liked Sagal, and not just because I was married to Alia. He was a smart fellow, for a mountain peasant, and had become as comfortable with a sword in his hand as he had been with a spade. He was utterly loyal, which is rare in retainers, and I valued his unvarnished opinion.
"Looks like it's haunted,"
he said warily as we entered the dark doorway into the keep. The Bovali are surprisingly unsuperstitious for a mountain people, but that probably has more to do with the utter lack of professional priests and real temples in Bovall than any native sensibility. Long story, that. But if the castle that first day inspired that kind of reaction in a pragmatic Bovali peasant, that was telling. "Haunted by neglect," I said. "Not spirits. If there was any real spirits, I expect I would know it."
"Aye, I suppose you would,"
he conceded with a sigh. The first few chambers inside the keep were dark and damp and smelled of dog shit and mildew. The rushes on the floor hadn't been changed in months, if not years. I conjured a mage light to illuminate the way and almost regretted being able to see the scope of the mess in the great hall. Things crawled in there. The great hall had been turned into sort of a catch-all storage room, and was completely cluttered with bales, bags, and boxes, with no rhyme or reason about them. The fire on the great hearth at the rear of the hall was a sputtering, disheartened flame that did nothing to heat the place. It was buried in a pile of ash, and the chimney was dangerously choked with decades of creosote. There were no tapestries on the walls, allowing a nasty draft to blow that made it almost as cold as outside. Torches and lanterns were few and far between. There were two banners there I didn't recognize, but they were mildewed and ratty beyond repair. I ordered them burned. The lower chambers of the turrets looked like bandits had lived there and moved out in disgust. One room was filled with firewood, long rotted and infested with termites. The door to the rear tower was broken, and the tower itself seemed to have been abandoned altogether. The upstairs sections were likewise stuffed with trash and debris, though they were more livable than the great hall. Matron Peg's room was the neatest of them all, a sparsely furnished cell with a simple altar to Brigga and Corsa, a local goddess I was unfamiliar with, in an alcove. There was also a well-locked box she seemed terribly attached to. Sir Aaron Tal's room looked like the haunt of a barfly. He hadn't taken the time to be neat in packing his belongings, but even laying the clutter aside, the place was a sty. The only thing that seemed at all cared for was the large wooden pegboard used to keep track of the debts the peasants owed. He also kept the accounts here, in two big books. Looking them over, I saw that the last entry had been made a year ago, and the previous one no timelier. There was a treasury of sorts, an iron lockbox at the foot of his rickety and foul-smelling bed, where the castle's wealth was kept. It was nearly empty. So was the barrel of wine in the corner. I wasn't surprised. The upper reaches of the keep were littered with fallen leaves and sticks, and the backside had become one long pissoir. The great stone cisterns were dry or topped with scum. There were dungeons, but thankfully those sorry holes were empty. Unfortunately, so were the storerooms. The square tower acted as the barracks for the lackluster men-at-arms, and the men had enterprisingly stuffed moss and rags into the chinks of the stone to keep it warm. The courtyard in between was choked with weeds and overgrown, leaving only a narrow stone path to get from one section to the other. I stood atop the square tower and looked over the rest of my fortress. So I had a broken castle, a ravaged land, an empty treasury. And it was all mine. So much for my dream of a life of leisure. As nobility went, this wasn't the high end. But I had resources at my disposal. One was the grant that came along with the patent, 5,000 ounces of gold from the ducal treasury. That was probably worth more than the entire domain, honestly. Add to that my personal savings and about a dozen high-quality emeralds, and I had a decent nest egg. Perhaps even enough to rescue this wretched estate. Maybe. I'd spent plenty of that just paying for the Bovali refugees to make the journey upriver, but there was still a fair amount left. I devoutly hoped it would be enough to rescue this ruin. The fact that I was a mage might help with that, too. When His Grace decided, for reasons of his own, largely dealing with political expediency, to break with tradition, custom, and ancient law, and give me this prize. It had been partially as an experiment. I had sold him on backing my order of extremely talented and recently augmented war magi, partially by pleading with him how useful magic could be in the lives of ordinary people. Sevendor was to be my experiment in how an enlightened mage lord could be beneficial to his people. I was the first mage lord, but I wasn't alone. There were a dozen and a half new mage lords after the bloody battle of Timberwatch, and half of Northern Alshar, the part that wasn't owned by the goblins, was now run by high magi. That's what wizards equipped with precious, powerful Irionite were calling themselves with my encouragement. Granting them lands on the edge of disputed territory was a sensible and low-risk proposition for the Duke. But this was different. Sevendor was smack in the middle of his feudal heartland. But if I made this work, then other friends and colleagues stood a chance of gaining similar power. If I didn't, well, I owned this shithole now, and it would be my own damn fault if I couldn't do better than Sir Erenthal. Overall, things were pretty bleak, which Sagal never tired of pointing out. We'd be better off starting over and building from scratch, he commented at one point, when we were traversing the rickety bridge between the donjon and the round tower. It isn't totally hopeless, Mage Lord, Sir Kay disagreed, making the journey across the plank a lot more nimbly than I'd expected. The foundation seems sturdy, at least. No sign of recent settling. Probably built directly on top of the bedrock, I agreed. But beyond the foundations, I'm more inclined to agree with Sagal, which pleased Sagal to no end. For one thing, it's too small by half. I want this castle ready to receive everyone in the valley, and that's going to be a lot more people once the rest of the Bavali arrive. And I want it in condition to defend against, well, against a lot. I didn't have to say a whole lot of goblins, because we all knew that's what the possibility was. We all survived the siege of Bovol Castle, where a half a million of the angry, furry little buggers tried to kill us. Now they were still 1,000 leagues away, but armed with mighty magic and a fanatical undead leader, there was a distinct possibility that they could make it to Sevendor well within my lifetime. Every Bovali understood that, even if most of the nobility of the duchy still thought it far-fetched. Hells, they could be here next year, if we really screwed up. The round tower was actually in better condition than the rest of the keep, and had likely been abandoned simply because the space wasn't needed. It was a four-story affair, capped with a rotting wooden cone that provided cover for its crenellated top floor. It was 40 feet in diameter, tapering slightly as it rose. There was a fireplace on every floor, and a chimney that shot up beyond the rotted roof. Only the top floor was really damaged. I think I could make this place kind of homey, I offered, as we descended the stairs back down. When I got to the jammed door, a simple spell broke it free and allowed access to the lower chamber. It's private, it's snug, well, snugger, and the top floor will make an excellent lab. You intend to live here, Mage Lord? Sir Kay asked in surprise. I don't see why not. Wizards are used to living in towers, as much as knights are used to living in castles. With a little cleaning, a little magic, and a lot of money, it won't be so bad. The Mage Lord is foresightful, Sir Kay said tactfully. Sagal grunted. The Mage Lord is a bloody optimist, he snorted. My sister-in-law isn't going to be happy in this place, I fear. I guess I'll just have to keep her distracted then, I replied, as we entered the deceptively named Great Hall. When I was done with my inspection, I assembled my people back down in the inner bailey. The day was fading already, and the temperature was dropping, but I wanted to address them before they fled in despair. They were my other resource, and perhaps my greatest one. They needed a lordly pep talk. First there was my new bride, Lady Alia, 7 months pregnant now, but no less a leader for her delicate condition. Besides being beautiful and insatiable, she also had uncanny wisdom and intelligence, and that's not just the crowing of a happy new bridegroom. She had run her family's prosperous farmstead and creamery up in the mountains of Bovol Vale, and those skills would be valuable in organizing the castle and running the staff. There was Sagal, of course, and Alia's sister, his wife, Ella, my new extended family. He and his wife were one of 60 of Bovali refugee families who agreed to take my service when I received my grant, joined by dozens of Bovali stragglers and mercenaries who were keen to forge a new life far from the dead god's hordes. To them, even this shithole was welcome. I had a genuine admiration for the resilient Bovali. Strong, hearty mountain folk all, used to a lenient lord and prosperous times, they had handled the adversity of invasion, displacement, and relocation better than I could have hoped. Most had some experience in arms. After the horrible siege, most had lost friends and family and all they held dear, and all were eager to start new lives, far away from their old lands and old enemies. The bulk of them would be here in a week or so, after we had settled in and prepared for them. At least, that was the plan. I'd brought Sir Kay, Sagal, and a few other stout, well-armed Bovali lads with me as an advanced party, in case I ran into difficulties. Also with us was Ferrando, the mercenary cavalry captain who agreed to lead my garrison, once I'd offered him the position. He wasn't the finest soldier in the world, but then I didn't need the finest to turn Bovali peasants into decent infantry. I just needed a capable leader of men, one who knew his trade well enough to teach it. Ferrando was more than adequate for that task. I liked the Romiran. He was a good cavalry soldier and a good leader of men. He was also sick of fighting goblins and fleeing for his life, and had led his remaining 30 soldiers here with the promise of a good garrison billet. He wasn't much good as a cavalry captain now, anyway. More than 2/3 of his men had no horses, so I had the infantry guarding our baggage at the riverport. We shouldn't need them right away. As warriors, that is. We'd need every man of them to help put this ruin right. Finally, there was Sir Kay. Yes, that Sir Kay. I assure you, he was quite surprised when I asked him to take my service in the aftermath of my wedding in Talry. I could understand why. Sir Kay had been the castellan of Beauval Castle, under the notorious Sire Coucy, as loyal a knight retainer as one could ask for. He'd also been in charge when I'd overthrown his boss and taken control of Beauval's defences in the final days of the siege, so the possibility of resentment on his part was high. A lesser man might not have been able to rise from that humiliation, but that demonstrated what kind of character Sir Kay possessed. He'd spent the last 3 months playing sheepdog to a few thousand Bovali refugees in an old ducal castle, thousands of miles from their homeland, while I was off fighting the goblin hordes in Alshar, and he'd managed to keep them together. He'd done his best, after Kusi's brother died of an infection acquired during the siege, to keep the frightened peasants fed, clothed, sheltered, and protected, with the assistance of a few other of Kusi's gentlemen knights who'd escaped the siege. The Bovali looked to Sir Kay, and he would be instrumental in installing them into their new homeland. He was the last vestige of order left from their old lives, and the Bovali peasants looked to him fiercely, I'd found, despite his dour character and reputation for hard dealing. Sir Kay and I had never gotten along well in Beauval, but we respected each other professionally, and that was a sufficient foundation to base our arrangement upon. I needed an experienced castellan, and he needed a job. Once he recognized my patent of nobility and my knighthood, he dropped much of his attitude towards me and actually treated me with respect and deference. I asked him about his change of heart on the road to Sevendor, one night, a few weeks before, when we were deep in our cups. He just shrugged and replied, I was a brother knight now, and thus he was bound by the rules of chivalry, which required him to treat me as a peer, not a tradesman. He spoke about it as if it was a natural law. I'll never understand the nobility. The respect he was accorded by the Bovali was important to me. I knew from the moment I selected Sevendor that it was a thinly populated fief. To do what I wanted to do with it, I'd need help, lots of willing, motivated help. You can't hire that kind of help. You have to inspire it. The Bovali were cut off from the only place they'd ever known. They were lost and needed a home. Sir Kay was the bridge to lead as many of them as would come to Sevendor. He and Sir Onsil and a few others had accompanied Sagal and his wife upriver for my wedding, and I had asked him to join us after we sorted out the shenanigans that erupted. Say what you will about his taciturn manner, Sir Kay knew how to get the most out of the Bovali, and if they didn't love him for it, they did not hate him either. I felt I had chosen well. He was well suited for the task of Castellan. Sir Kay was Bovali as well, or close enough, a landless wilderlands knight, less refined in culture and manners than even that sorry sack of sherry, Erenthal. But what he lacked in sophistication, he made up for with competence, common sense, fairness, and sheer determination. He was a proven castellan, having been in charge of Bovol Castle before it fell to the Goblin Horde. Apart from our political issues, he'd run the siege as admirably as anyone could have. As such, it had fallen to him to keep the place in as good repair as it had been. Perhaps that was why he seemed so gloomy that first day in Sevendor, seeing what little he had to work with. The castellan is an office of high import. Technically, a castellan keeps the keys to the fortress and lockbox, but practically, the office also oversees most of the day-to-day affairs of a fief in the absence of the lord of the manor. An estate lived or died on the competence of its castellan. He was the one who got things done. Sir Kay knew how to keep a staff in line, organize a household, regulate local affairs, and dispense petty justice. He hadn't been particularly well-liked in Bovol Vale, but that doesn't mean he was a poor castellan. The job doesn't lend itself to making friends. But that was the kind of determination I'd need by the wagon load if Sevendor was ever going to prosper. He was efficient and professional. He was also without a job. Rather than take up the sellswords trade, as he'd been considering, I convinced him to accept a post at my small castle, and I could see he was grateful for the opportunity. I, at least, was a known quantity. I looked to him gratefully as my people ringed around me. He nodded, called everyone to attention, and I started giving orders. I tried to be polite about it. First, let's get Milady's tent set up here in the courtyard. I won't let her in that place until every inch has been scrubbed down to the bare stone and wood, and all vermin eliminated. There was a general murmur of agreement. Everyone had been appalled at the state of the castle. It was 6 weeks before the first official day of winter, but the weather was yet mild. We'd slept in worse, plenty of nights on the road and river, and to my eye the weather was likely to be fair enough for a few days, a light snow shower notwithstanding. We wouldn't freeze out here any more than we would if we were in the keep. Second, Sagal, take the two scrawny excuses for cows in the byre here and have some of your lads slaughter them. Then take one down to the village with the compliments of their new lord. Cook the other. Take what's left of that cask of wine we found in Erenthal's room too. Tell them they have a day of holiday tomorrow, which will give us time to get organized, and 2 days of work detail at the castle after that. Sir Kay, escort the fair down there, introduce yourself, tell them how bright their future just became. Pass out some pennies, even. Rollo, you go with him, try to see what the people think. Goodman Rollo, now Corporal Rollo, was another Bovali peasant who had taken up arms for the siege and who had forgotten to put them back down again. He'd been a crofter until his wife and daughter had been slain at his home in the first wave of the invasion. He and his brother had made it to Bovol Castle and safety. His brother had perished in the siege, leaving him all alone in the world. He was a burly man, barrel-chested and well-muscled, a peaceful man forced to arms by tragedy. His constant smile, mail shirt, and sword masked the man who lost his family, but you could tell it gnawed at him powerfully within. He would have made a good ancient in an army, I think, but he would have made an even better family man. I could give him a task and count on it getting done, without messing it up, so he'd acted as one of my aides along the journey. Oh, and let those two poor fellows in the stocks free in celebration of my investiture. Unless they're rapists or murderers, that is. Rollo nodded gamely. He'd tend to it. Captain Ferrando, post sentries tonight. Your own men, not the locals. Take the spearholders who live here in hand and evaluate their fitness for duty. The captain nodded simply. I could be sure it would be done. He'd done well enough drilling the Bovale back during the siege. Putting the right people in the right job was the only way I was going to get anything done. "Now for the cleaning," I continued. "Starting at dawn, I want every man and woman who isn't pregnant with my child to bring everything out of that castle and into the yard. We're going to attack the place with lye and water. I want a full inventory and accounting, down to the last nail and button, and clean out that floor. Matron Peg, if you will show my people where fresh rushes may be cut, I'd appreciate it." "Yes, my lord," she said, wide-eyed. She bowed way too low, unsure of how I would react. She was frightened, I realized. For all she knew, I could throw her out of the castle and make her a beggar. It occurred to me that I might get a better response if they knew better what to expect. Let me tell you all my plans for this place," I said to everyone, a little nervously. Time for my speech. I looked to Alia for support, and she favoured me with a confident smile. "I am the first mage to hold noble title and land since the fall of the Majocracy. This little experiment of His Grace is to prove that the High Magi can be trusted as model subjects, and not oppress their people or destroy their neighbours. He gave us shit all to do it with. This estate is a bad joke, but I aim to prove him right, and I'll need your help to do it. We all saw the same conditions as we rode in. Compared to what you're used to, Sevendor will be hard, for a time. But there is great possibility here. With hard work and a whole lot of money, we can restore this little land to prosperity again. It's barely peopled, with plenty of room for more folk. It's near enough to the river, yet has little to trade now. I intend to change all of that. We'll get a smithy, a tannery, a creamery, a temple, a mill, a bakery, whatever we need, whomever we need. Except a spellmonger. I think we're fine on that account." That brought laughter from my Bovale. "There is hard work aplenty in the days ahead," I continued, "and I think you all know I'm not the type to sit back and sup on sweetmeats when there is work to be done. So all I ask is that you work as hard as I, and in the coming days we shall rescue this poor neglected estate from squalor and build Sevendor into the most prosperous little land in the duchy." There were cheers after that, and I ordered a cask of cider breached for the occasion. As I stood by and watched the tent go up in the twilight, Alia sidled up to me as sultry as a woman shaped like a watermelon could. "Brilliant speech, spellmonger," she murmured. "I think they even believed it." "Which part?" I asked, seeking her hand. Her fingers were cold. "The part about you working the hardest," she whispered. "Good. That was the most important part," I whispered back. She stifled a giggle. "How does it feel to be the lord of the land?" "Well, my ass hurts from being in the saddle for so long. I'm starving, it's cold, and I think I'm allergic to something in the castle. Apart from that, pretty damn good." "Good enough to service the lady of the castle?" "What? Already?" I asked, surprised. Not that she had been at all demure during her pregnancy. In fact, since our wedding night. "It would be a propitious start to your rule if you should consecrate your new land by a life-affirming consummation," she explained, as reasonably as any high-born lady. "That's the classiest case for a late-afternoon quickie I've ever heard."
"Good. Did it work?"
"We'll see. I've only got about 8,000 details to see to before tonight."
"I'll take that as a yes, as soon as the pavilion is set up."
She leaned up and kissed me, thoroughly.
"Oh, okay,"
I agreed dumbly, when she broke it off.
"Men are so easy,"
she said with a satisfied smile, as Sagal and a few lads began assembling our portable home. After Alia had gotten her lusty exercise and gone to sleep, I stayed awake and enjoyed the feeling of castle ownership far into the night. It was peaceful, once the chill was chased away by a fire. We sat up around the fire in the bailey late into the night, and talked about everything that would need doing while we killed that cider. We got to know our new retainers and learn a little about the people of Sevendor, such as they were. They were suspicious, of course, with good reason. After Erin Tal's disgraceful governance, They had seen nothing but neglect and decay haunt Sevendor in their lifetimes. The idea of a local lord who was working in his own interest frightened them, as well as excited them. That pretty much described my own feelings on the matter. Excited at the prospect of the possibilities of Sevendor, but frightened of the amount of labor and effort and money it would take to bring to fruition. With each passing cup, it became alternatively easy and impossible to make it work in my mind. All I had to do was make a list, and it would be done in no time. Just before I went to warm my cold hands on my warm wife in my tent, I looked up into the night sky and saw a massive snowflake descending, the harbinger of a sprinkling to come. I decided to take that as a good omen. It was the Mage Lord's prerogative.